We are back today with one of our favorite voices, Nina. She is mom to baby Josh, who is now 19 weeks old. And this episode is not just a sweet update on how things are going. Today, we have got a survival guide for the all too real experience of the 4-month sleep regression. We talk about night wakings, nap refusals, and endless rocking. And this week, mom is a little on the edge. She's also been wondering, is this the end of our breastfeeding journey? And it's a real raw and honest look at what happens when sleep falls apart and a lot of things don't make sense anymore. Today, you're going to hear about why sleep regression happens and how to move through them. And then we're also going to look at how to support fussy feeding, and particularly around this 4-month stage where it's just so prevalent, and how to introduce formula and solids. And then we're also going to look at why some babies fight sleep with everything they've got and how you can reset their rhythm. So if you're in the thick of it, and if you've got a 4-month-old, this is an episode that will remind you that you're not alone and that there is a way forward. Please do share this episode with any friends you have who've got little ones in the first 3 to 4 months after their baby's born. It is a vital episode to share. Thanks, mums. On with the episode.
Welcome to Sense by Meg Forer, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Forer, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we're going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Meg here every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. This is Sense by Meg Forer, and I'm delighted that you're joining us today for a very special episode. It is one of our regular guests, Nina. And for those of you who've been tracking Nina's journey, she has got little Josh, who is 19 weeks now, and we've been tracking him all the way since birth, every other week or so. And he's just been an absolute delight, and watching Nina fall in love with him has been an amazing journey for me as well. So Nina, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us.
Oh, it's so nice as always to be on here, but specifically this week I'm in desperate need. So I have been counting down the hours until I can chat to you and get some help. But anyway, we'll get to that.
Brilliant. Well, let's give context. So many moms who've got 19-week-old babies who are listening to this will have gone through sleep regression. And it's a term that is thrown around and kind of almost haunts us as mothers because we know it's coming. And then for some babies, it doesn't happen. But for many, many little ones at around about 17 weeks, the wheels do start to fall off. And that's exactly what happened with Josh. He was doing quite a bit of contact napping when we spoke a few weeks ago. And before he was 12 weeks old, you're a very organic mum in many ways. You go with the flow and it's lovely. And at the time, he was doing a huge amount of contact napping. And you said, is this going to come back and bite me? And I said, well, if he's sleeping well at night, we can leave him with contact naps in the day and see where it goes. But there is always the risk that it could turn into a habit. And of course, just a couple of weeks later, in our last episode, you said to me, the wheels are falling off. The sleep at night also now isn't fabulous as well as the days. And so I wanted to do a special episode today specifically focused on sleep regressions for little ones at around about this kind of 4 to 5 month stage. So to set the context, how are things going with Josh?
Okay, so I actually made some notes quickly before our call because I didn't want to forget anything. Also because it kind of feels like it's a bit of a chicken and an egg situation at the moment where I've been going through, especially when I'm nap trapped by Josh, been going through the notes from your sleep course to just try and sort of figure out what my next steps need to be, because right now I think that I'm still stuck in the current status quo. But it's kind of because of circumstance. So I'm not quite sure where to dive in, but let me just do to set the scene. Maybe the first thing to mention is as like the sort of latest step up in how badly his sleep has been going, is that the past two nights he has very strangely had about an hour and a half of non-stop screaming before we could put him down. Now, Josh has always been
He's not like a screamy baby. And if he cries, you can quite easily sort of, you know, solve for the issue. And he falls asleep quite easily as well. Literally the last two nights, there's been these, and actually, shame, not last night. Last night was my turn with Pete and Joburg, but the night before, Pete was on his own with Joshi and needing to do this. But from his the sort of retelling of the story, it sounds like exactly the same situation where he's been fed. So I don't think it's hunger. But he just did not want to go down. So for both the two nights, I did have him do a late-ish cat nap, which I've been feeling like he does need, because otherwise his previous nap, he ends at, say, 3-ish, which just feels too long for him to be pushed until 6-7, where we're trying to sort of stick to about a 7 o'clock bedtime, because that previously, pre the last two nights, felt like when he was really tired and could easily go down. So that would be too long a wake window. So I would sort of give him a 5 to 5:20 cat nap, which he had the last two nights, and usually that's okay. But unfortunately, as I said, the last two nights, he just did not want to go down. And so he would be fed. And then after that, he would just get so aggravated almost that we were trying to put him down. So both nights we would sort of take him out, walk around the garden with him. He tends to be calmed by fresh air. So take him out of his sleeping bag, just reset him. But it kind of felt like even when he was awake, so I said to Pete, like when he was doing it on his own, maybe he's just irritated that we're now trying to get him down and he actually doesn't want to because he's not tired yet. But even when he's awake, within that period, he's hacked off and screaming. So even trying to play with him or whatever just doesn't seem to calm him down. Last night, my parents are here at the moment, and even with the three of us, this boy was just screaming the whole way through. We tried everything. We tried to cool him down, you know, try to entertain him outside, inside, boob, dummy. I started trying to give him formula as well, which is something I'll touch on just now with the feeding. But nothing worked. Literally nothing calmed him down until about an hour and a half in, when I finally put him down on the bed to just get the carrier on so that I could put him in the carrier and then try and do a walk around with him. And then he just relaxed and he fell asleep. So I don't know if he'd literally just like screened himself out. But to this day, I'm still not quite sure what worked. And that's been very atypical for him. To rewind for the past sort of 3 weeks, I think I did mention to you previously the 4 month sleep regression had started, but it definitely has still been going over the past couple of weeks. So on average, he wakes up about 4 times a night. And I don't know whether it is now because it's become habit, because he's been doing it for a couple of weeks now, or if he's hungry. So I've been trying to give him a bit of formula during the day. He takes the bottle okay, but he sort of like plays with it in the beginning. So he doesn't like really suck and just get into it and glug it down as if he is absolutely starving. And he'll sort of play, drink it for the first, I would say, 60 mils, and then he would get irritated that we're still trying to get it in his mouth. And just while we're on the topic of the feeding, because I do kind of feel like that's related to the sleep. I've been trying to do the formula top up because I'm actually really struggling with him with the boob at the moment. And I'm almost at that point where I'm like, I don't know if this is the end of our breastfeeding journey. So he has become so like distractible and aware the past couple of weeks that literally I feel like there are very, very few points in the day that I can actually get a boob in his mouth. And this feels like really random to say, but almost the only time that I can do this is when he is like already sleeping and I can sort of, you know, when he then sort of starts to try and wake up after 20 minutes, I slip the boob in, and that's when he just sits and glugs on the boob for ages. So that's when he really gets like the chunks of his feed in. Otherwise, if he's properly awake, and then I also can tend to do it like as soon as he's woken up and he's sort of a little bit drowsy and he can just then sit on the boob. And so I'm hesitant to stop the contact napping almost exactly for that reason, because it feels like that's when he gets his food in. But I know that that's bad as well. But on the other hand, he doesn't seem to be falling asleep on the boob. That doesn't calm him down. It's a heady combination of rocking and dummy and sort of holding him in a very specific way, you know, the like rugby hold, very tight to the breast kind of a thing. He does fall asleep quite quickly when I do that. So there's like the shh, 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 shh for a couple of minutes, and then he'll fall asleep. So it's not like, to me, it's not a problem to get him to sleep that way. But then obviously we're still sort of struggling with him staying asleep during the day if he's not on a person. But as I said, I would hate to almost like have to not have him on me, because then truly I am worried that this boy is going to be malnourished. Sorry to just be sort of word vomiting all of this on you. I hope you're making notes. But so I've also been trying to think about timing of the naps, and whether it should be a little bit more specific timing, or whether the wake windows are still the right way to go about it. But for example, today I was chatting to my nanny about it, because, sometimes she would need to put Joshy down for a nap. So I was like trying to align with her on nap times. I was like, let's try and do, you know, X for the first one, Y, blah, blah, blah. And we had this plan, and then suddenly for his first nap, he does a 2-hour sleep instead of an hour and a half or an hour 15. And then suddenly it's like, okay, well, what to do now? So that's the one thing where I'm struggling with that. Should I actually then just be waking him up after an X amount of time and we try and stick to those times, or are wake windows okay? And in saying that, I do fear that his wake windows are actually quite long. Like, I just don't feel like after an hour and a half to 2.5 hours, he's tired. He seems to be pushing it to like 3-3.5 hours. And when he gets to that, he seems to be quite happy to go down. Before that, he gets so hacked off when I try and put him down early. And to the point where I almost feel like when I bring him into the room for a nap or even for his night sleep and he's not ready, he gets like, you know, like as soon as I haven't even closed the curtains, nothing. It's almost like he's got PTSD from like, I don't want to be going down now, you know, kind of a thing. And then he just gets all fussy, like straight away. So that's basically where I'm at, Meg. I'm sure I've forgotten things, so we can cover it in the process, but it's a hot mess.
Yeah, so it is a mess, I can hear. And before we get in, because I'm going to dive into each of these different areas, and you've given me such fabulous context, I do want to say that there will be moms who are listening to this whose blood pressure is rising just listening to the story, because certainly mine is. It sounds like it's a hot mess, like you said it was. And for some of them, they will be thinking, you need to just go with the flow and live it out and, you know, kind of feed as you're feeding and survive the sleep deprivation and just, you know, kind of really just go with it as it is. And there's a lot of debate on social media platforms where people are feeling like that and saying, you know, don't try and sleep train children too early. Don't get them to self-soothe too early. Don't be too rigid with them. You know, don't give up breastfeeding. And I think a lot of what I'm going to say might contradict that. And I want moms to know straight off the bat that there are different ways of doing this. When moms come to me to talk to me in my practice, it's because they can't carry on as they are anymore, because they're so sleep deprived that it's starting to interfere with their interactions with their other children, their partner, their child, and maybe even their mood as well, where, you know, we can get postnatal depression or similar kicking in, because it's just, you're past the point of no return. So I'm going to approach it from that perspective, that there are a lot of moms who cannot just continue with the status quo because it's actually untenable. And in that situation, I'm going to give you the gold standard for how we could progress. And there is going to be a little bit of work. So I'm going to go through all of these different areas. So let's start off with nutrition. I always start with the basics. And moms, for context, I have given Nina access to my Sleep Sense course. It is inside the Parent Sense app, so you can go and find it there. And you can go through all 10 lessons, and there's about a 10-minute video for each of the 10 lessons. And then there's a kind of almost like a project you do for each one. But I'm going to give you a snapshot. And then obviously, Nina, because you've actually been watching the videos, I can hear you've got some very relevant and important questions that a lot of other moms will have when they're doing the course. So we'll go through that. So I do want to start with his nutrition first. And I'm going to just chat around a couple of things there. The first thing is, when was the last time you had him weighed?
Probably about 2 weeks ago. I've got another nurse's appointment next week. He has to get more vaccinations. So I'll see then. But he seems to be totally on track, like beyond, basically. He's a big, chubby baby.
Yeah. And so for 9 out of 10 little ones who are in the cycle that you're in, which is this kind of, when do we feed? Day feeds seem to be going terribly, which I'll talk about now. Sleep, feeding at night, most of them are gaining weight really well. So in that context, now, moms, if your baby is not gaining weight well, or if you don't know what their weight gain is, you need to find out. And then this information wouldn't be pertinent to you. But in the situation with Josh, we do need to move him onto a routine that includes more of his feeds actually happening in daylight hours and not have it happening at night. Because what he's doing, and it's very, very classic for our very fussy babies and also for our social butterflies. And we'll talk about the sensory just now. He is a classic social butterfly. But what they tend to do is they hit 4 months old and they become too interested to be on the breast because the breast is super boring. You're staring at the same person for that whole time and a noise happens behind you and they almost hold onto their nipple and try and look over the shoulder and drag your nipple with them. You know, they just become very, very, very tricky feeders. So you've got a couple of options with this. The first is that you can offer him a bottle, no problem with that, either of expressed breast milk or a formula. And sometimes they just are easier to feed on bottles when they get to this age because these social butterflies are very difficult to feed. And I actually had one personally, so I know exactly what you're going through. And you want to know that they're getting in the nutrition in the day. So option one is to express and to give them some express breast milk bottles. The other option is to feed them in the dark, preferably immediately after he's woken up from a sleep. So you kind of get those feeds in, and you actually said it, that he feeds best when he's just woken up or when he's in the middle of the night. But the bottom line is that we do need to have those feeds happening during daylight hours predominantly. And because he's gaining weight nicely, we want a 3-hour stretch as a minimum, and then up to a 4-hour stretch as a maximum. And anywhere in between that is the right time to feed him. So if he's just woken up from a feed and it's been 3 hours, I would actually sit in the dark room with him and I would give him his feed then. And if he's asleep and then he wakes up and it's close to 4 hours, I would then definitely feed him in the room. There will be times when you cannot feed him. You know, the feed time will happen just before asleep, say, for instance. But by and large, feed when he wakes up, feed 3 to 4 hourly. Breastfeed if you can, because breast milk is superior to formula milk. If you can't, if he won't breastfeed, do express breast milk. And if he won't do that either, move on to formula. So I would say that that would be your strategy with him. And other important things is I would definitely include a formula top up in the evening because we want him to get him to stretch at night nicely. So that is a really good idea that you've already started to do. And so make up that little formula top up. And even if he feeds well just before bedtime, I would give him that top up bottle. And then the last thing I just want to say around nutrition is that absolutely from now onwards, no feed to sleep. So whatever happens, we can do rock to sleep, which we're going to talk about just now, but not feed to sleep. And the reason for that is that feed to sleep is an impossibly difficult habit to break as we get further and further down the road. So those are your principles on nutrition.
Can I ask something there? So just 2 things on nutrition that's cropping up. So does that also mean no feed to stay asleep? Is that the same thing? And then also some people are saying maybe he needs some solids. But to me, especially when you start solids, it's like you're giving them so little. Is that actually helping to keep them full and solid?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep?
ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
Is that actually helping to keep them full and solid?
Perfect. Two brilliant questions. The first one is, yes, it does mean no feedback to sleep. So if he has woken up, we're not going to try and use the milk to get him. And we actually want to separate those feeds completely. And because we are in a tricky space, and I don't say this for everybody, moms, if your baby's doing great, you don't have to change this. But in this situation, I would actually have him never sleep feeding lying down. So I would only feed him sitting upright in a feeding chair so that it feels like it is for nutrition rather than the comfort that gets associated with sleep. So yes, we need to separate feeds and sleeps. Then in terms of the solids, there's nothing wrong with starting solids at 19 weeks, but you are 100% correct that it's not going to make a major difference. And the reason for that is that it's so experimental at this stage. It's such small quantities. It's more for experimentation and flavor and sensory exposure than it is for the actual solids itself. Having said that, social butterflies really do tend to go into solids a little earlier because they're very bored by milk. And so they tend to start to move onto solids and then actually ramp down milk. And so one of the critical things that we say with social butterflies is you have to preference and protect their milk appetite until 6 months, because milk is the key food for babies until 6 months and beyond. But solids must not be the thing that fills them up before 6 months. So if you're going to start solids, it's not going to be a magic wand. I probably would do it actually at this stage. I'd start an 11 a.m. Little solids experimentation meal with him, but don't expect it to be the magic wand. But having said that, over the course of the next month, as we start to ramp up his proteins, and we can talk about that in the next episode, as we start to ramp up his proteins, it will actually impact his sleep. So for now, it is experimentation. It won't be the magic wand. But being that he is tricky, I probably would put it in. The last thing I want to say about nutrition, and then I will let you ask more questions about nutrition. The last thing I would want to say is that you will expect a night feed. So just because we're working on the sleep doesn't mean that his night feeds are going to go away. What we would want at this age is probably a night feed between 1 or 2 as the earliest in the morning, and then another one between 4 and 5. And obviously, if he goes for 2, it'll be closer to 5. If he goes for 1, it'll be closer to 4. So we are giving him the allowance of having a night feed, but when he's waking and it's not 1 yet, then you're going to have to find other ways to comfort him. And that, because he's gaining weight nicely, can include cooled boiled water. So I would have a little dinky bottle feeder set up in his room of cool boiled water. And if he wakes at 10, 11, 12, 1, I would probably give him that water, a dummy and a doo-doo blankie. And then at 1 o'clock or any time later, I would do a feed, and then 3 hours later, another feed.
Okay.
Noted. And when he cries, you'll go in. First, you'll listen. So we're going to talk about sleep coaching just now, but you will listen first, see whether or not he settles himself, because that's quite important. They're at the age now where they actually can start to settle themselves. And then if he's not settling himself, and it is, let's say, 1 or 2 in the morning, I would go in, I would lift him up out of the bed, I would put him into my arms and let him feed in a chair, not lying down again, rouse him when he's finished and put him down awake so that you are separating that feed to sleep at night as well.
Okay.
So I've touched on something there that I just want to swing back around to, and that's the zone that he's sleeping in. I would also, because he is a social butterfly, I would be moving him to his own room if he's not already. Is he in his own room?
I just wanted to ask. No, he's not. And we're working on it. The room that I'm in at the moment is going to be his room. So there's little bits that are going up in expectation of that move. But I do think that he needs to, yeah, especially because of that. I think I probably overreact to the noises at night and I jump in too quickly. Whereas if he's not in the room, that would be easier. And also, he probably also just gets a little bit distracted by movements that we make. So I think, yeah.
Exactly. And your social butterflies do that. You walk in at night and you step on the floorboard. They will wake up because it could be something interesting. You roll over in the middle of your sleep. it could be interesting. Your husband snores, it could be interesting. So these social butterflies, which he is, they have terrible FOMO. They don't want to go to sleep and they don't want to stay asleep because they could be missing out on something, you know, this fear of missing out. So he must go into his own room now. And again, mums, if you're listening to this and you don't want your little one in his own room, this is not for all babies. But if you've got a social butterfly who's got really bad sleep problems, it is for you. And then also, Nina, if his room's fairly close to yours, I wouldn't even have a monitor in there because you will hear him. You know, monitors also just make us overreact. So you kind of want to not hear him when he doesn't need you. So when he's being noisy, turning over, calling out, which he could do up to every 45 minutes through the night. Babies, actually, good sleepers, actually rouse every 45 minutes through the night. But because they're good sleepers, they don't call us back. They just rouse. But what's happening with him, he's rousing and then he's thinking, oh, could be a chink of light, could be a sound from dad. I'll quickly call mom back just to see what's happening. So if he's in his own room, you won't hear all those little squawks and he won't be disturbed by you. All right. So that is nutrition. Are there any other questions on nutrition?
No. That's okay.
All right. The next basic we have to rule out is ears. And I only talk about this because he's waking so much at night, four times at night, and because he was so unsettled in the evening the other day. And you've got a toddler, and that means that there are germs in the house all over the place. And so I would just have a quick little look at that. You know, has he had a cold? Does he need to have his ear? They have a little, and you can actually get it done at the pharmacy. They look in his ears and they see if there's a light reflex. And if there is or if there isn't, they can tell you if they've got glue ear. Probably not, to be honest with you. I think this is more sensory than anything, but it's one of the things that we do rule out. Otherwise, on health, I'm not worried about anything from what you say, unless you are.
I wouldn't have been before the two nights ago, but at the moment, I'm very interested to see if he does it again tonight. Just because it's so out of character for him, I am wondering whether maybe it's teeth, maybe it's something else. I don't know. We gave him a bit of Calpol on both nights at some stage in the game. I don't know if that's what finally managed to get him down because the pain situation was sorted. So I don't actually know. Apart from pain, is there anything else that could create such an extreme reaction?
Yeah. I'm fairly certain it's because he's just overstimulated and he's not working out how to navigate. And, you know, one of the things that little ones at this age have to learn to navigate is to transition from awake to asleep without crying and without fussing and doing it themselves. And when they become overstimulated and overtired, and I'm listening to the stretches he's having 3 hours between each of his day sleeps, I think he could be really tired. So, and then they just can't come back from it. They can't self-regulate. They're too tired and they need too much support to actually self-soothe. And then all the things you're doing actually exacerbate the overtiredness because you're keeping him awake. You're walking him outside, you're jiggling him. So I'm going to talk about bedtime and what to do just now.
Okay, great.
The third thing to look at is the sensory, and I'm not going to go into great detail other than to say inside the app is a course called the Sensory Personality Course. From 4 months onwards, I do recommend mums do it. I can tell you straight off the bat, everything that we've said and spoken about since he was very little points to him being a social butterfly. So social butterflies are different sleepers to other babies. Each of your sensory profile sleeps differently, and your social butterfly has a real fear of missing out. So if they don't have a routine, or if their routine is out, or if the bedroom's slightly different, or if they're overtired, they just can't self-regulate and they then wire themselves. And they also do not give sleepy signals, which is exactly what you said. You take him to the room and he doesn't want to go to sleep because A, he's got fear of missing out, and B, he's not looking tired. He's a live wire. So one of the things with our sensory seekers is, I mentioned, moving him into his own room. Another one is that about 15 minutes before sleep time, he needs some real defrag time. So he needs to go to his room and have some quiet time, not going into his cot, but just sitting and looking at a book with you or having a little baby massage or whatever it is, like just a little bit of quiet time. You can also do a walk in the garden, but it really does need to be super calm. And I know that's difficult with a toddler around, and you need a little bit of kind of a good space to actually separate the alert, wired baby from the sleep space, from the sleep state. So that's your sensory profile. The other thing with him is that these little ones need a lot of movement to be able to fall asleep, which is why you're rocking him to sleep. So I want you to get a little swing. You've probably got one already for Max. And I want you to give at least 15 minutes of swing time every day, particularly in the late afternoon, to Joshy. And that swinging, that vestibular movement will help him also to, and it's not to get him to go to sleep, by the way, of course, it's just to give him some nice vestibular movement in the late afternoon so that he's actually ready to sleep at night as well. It tends to help them to sleep. Okay, so that's the sensory. Any questions on sensory?
No, but that is super helpful to know that like that is actually very much how he is, and I shouldn't be taking that the eyes are still going wild as him not being ready for his sleep. So I guess I don't know if that's, you know, going to be the next question, what we're moving on to. But and especially what you said about for them, it's actually quite important to have a routine because otherwise they're all over the place. Should I then be sticking to specific whether it is wake windows or actual times to sort of keep him calm?
Yeah, that's exactly where we're going, is today's sleep routine. And your question is brilliant. Under 6 months, I still encourage us to look at awake times rather than actual sleep times, because actual sleep times, some mornings he might wake at 5 and others at 7. And so you can't always have exactly the same sleep time of 7 o'clock because sometimes he's just woken up then. So I do prefer at this age to still have the awake times. And the awake times for his age are 1.5 to 2.5 hours. So he can be starting to move out to 2.5 hours, and particularly any sleep after 12 in the afternoon must be 2.5 hours. And in the morning, it can be kind of 1.5 to 2 hours. So it could be as much as 2 hours in the morning if he's really not looking sleepy. So what you're going to do there is, again, I'd like you to put him into his own nursery for this. I'd like him to have his own room. And I want like super, super, super consistency around sleep space. And it does mean that a lot of what happens at this age is just very rigid, and it doesn't feel very fluid and very flexible, because you need to go and fetch Max from school, or you need to take him to a play date. And now suddenly you've got a baby that has to sleep in that one sleep space. But I encourage you just to do it for 2 weeks. And once we've got his sleep sorted, go flexible again. But just until we got him sorted, let's go really rigid. He goes into his room at 2.5 hours. Always after he woke up from his last sleep. He then has about a 15-minute defrag time in the afternoon. Obviously, you move it later, maybe an hour later, but in the morning, 1.5 hours after he woke up, into his room, a little bit of 15 minutes defrag time, darken the room, read a book to him, give him a little bit of water. That's no problem, but not a feed immediately before asleep. And then into his cot to go to sleep. And then you're actually going to walk out the room, but we'll talk about what you do in terms of walking out the room just now, but I'm just giving you the principle of how you're going to do that day sleep. If he wakes up after 20 minutes, you're going to listen and you're going to see whether or not he'll settle back to sleep. The strategies I want you to have for him, the one is I want a white noise app or machine in his room. So that must be playing at about 70 decibels at speaking level the whole time that he's in his room. Does he take a dummy?
He does, but he doesn't keep it in, first of all. So he tends to spit it out pretty quickly, unless I've got him held, you know, and sort of the dummies on me so that he has to keep it in. And he's not, it's not like a guarantee that it's going to settle him. So I would say it's hit and miss, maybe 50% of the time at max, it actually gets something properly settled.
Okay. So we are going to cause a dummy habit here, but I'm not worried about that because we'll deal with that later. Babies only work out how to use their dummies from about 6 to 7 months anyway. So we know he's not going to know how to use his dummy right now, but what we're going to do is we're going to give him the dummy and we're going to help him for it to stay in, actually holding it and patting it, which I'll talk more about just now when I talk about the soothing techniques. And I also want him to have a doo-doo blankie, which even if he hasn't taken to one, he must have one. So you just keep instilling one doo-doo blankie, always the same. He might not love it, but that's fine. He takes it. You just give it to him. His room must be cool. I'm just seeing no night lights in his room because he's too alert and they'll wake him up. I've spoken about own room, block out lining on his blinds, and a weighted blanket as well. So you can get a little Nurture One weighted blanket or one of the other ones, and that's going to help him to stay a little bit more asleep as he lies in his cot. So those are the principles for the day sleeps, and then we'll get on to what when things go wrong as well. Any other questions on day sleeps?
Yeah, so I guess I almost want to like just go through the minutia of how to put him down. So we've spoken about what needs to be there for him to be able to fall asleep. And you mentioned after 20 minutes, if he does wake up, we're going to get to that, which I'm guessing is maybe the same way to keep him asleep as to how to actually get him to fall asleep. I just feel, and I mean, I've tried this where I put him down and it's the shh, shh and the patting and trying to keep the dummy in the mouth. I mean, I can do the patting and the shushing until kingdom comes, but he will, you know, arch his body and throw himself all over the place and get so worked up that there is not a chance that that is going to soothe him. So I'm a little bit stuck on like exactly what is going to get this kid to sleep. Yeah.
And we're going to get there. I've just got one more thing before I tell you that, and that is the bedtime. So you mentioned something that is massively common at this age, and that's that he's waking sometimes at 3 PM and he cannot get through until 7 PM. Obvious reasons. It's a 4-hour stretch. You'll never manage it. So a couple of things there. The first one is that principle of that awake time in the late part of the day is about 2.5 hours. So he could almost push it to 3, but 2.5 hours is optimally what we want to see for him, which means that if he wakes, so let's take his ideal sleep time. I think you said you like 7 o'clock. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. But happy to move that along if
needs be. No. That's fine. So if I had ideal sleep time is 7 p.m., then he has to be awake at 4:30. Now, if he wakes in time that he could actually get a sleep in sometime between 4 and 4:30. In other words, let's say you could squeeze a sleep in at 4:15, then I would get a sleep in at 4:15 and keep his bedtime at 7 and even just give him a 15-minute cat nap there. Okay. So that's your ideal world. So that would be where he's woken kind of at 2:30 and then you can fit something back in at about, you know, kind of 4:15, you can just get it in. So anytime if he wakes by 2:30, get in a cat nap at about 4 to 4:30, and then you'll get bedtime at 7. Okay. So that's what you're going to do if he wakes before 2:30. If he wakes later, and that's where your wheels are coming off. So if he wakes from 2:30 to let's say 3:30, then you're going to need to get in a very short cat nap and please try and get him awake by 5. So that would be put him in a carrier. Don't worry about the sleep zone then. Doesn't matter where it happens. If he falls asleep, best in the car, best in a carrier, best in a pram, just get him to have a 15-minute cat nap. It won't form habits. That's what you're going to do for that one. But if he wakes a little later, like 3:30 to 4, then what I would do is I would actually bring bedtime forward. So I wouldn't try and fit in another one. So if he wakes from 3:30 onwards, I would actually say, right, 3:30 gets me to 6:30. I'll get him into his room to try and go to sleep by 6. And between 6 and 6:30, you put him down. So then you don't do the cat nap. Does that make sense? You've got kind of three options there. If he wakes before 2:30, if he wakes 2:30 to 3:30, or if he wakes after 3:30. And that's how you're going to do it. Makes sense.
Yes, that makes total sense. And with regards to the bedtime, would you say there is a better bedtime for kids of this age? Or because, I mean, I'm not married to 7. It just feels like that is roughly when he starts. Should we be pushing it forward or later or what?
It's fine. 6:30 to 7 is fine. Absolutely fine. Yeah. So some little ones go to sleep as early as 6. And so if he has now woken up at 3:30, let's just say, or maybe 4 o'clock, 3:30, yeah, even 3:30, then I would move his bedtime forward to 6, because that's a 2.5 hour wake time. We know that. Even 3, it's a 2.5 hour wake time. Bring his bedtime forward to 6, and he's going to be less likely to have that big fat fussing going on at that time. So he'll be tired, he'll be ready. So move bedtime to 6. If he wakes up, you know, later, then take it to 7. But I actually think that potentially, if he wakes any time before 3:30, I would just move that bedtime early. I really would.
What has happened once or twice, maybe more, the days all melt into one now, but sometimes when I try and put him down earlier, he tends to think that's his cat nap. So if he goes down at 6, he sometimes will wake up at 6:24 and then...
Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah. So that's very, very common. And what you're going to do then is you're going to give him a top-up feed. So you're going to keep the room pitch dark. You're going to go back in. You're going to give him his formula bottle then, his little top-up. You keep it dark.
Fine.
Okay. So any time after he's gone to bed for the night after 6 p.m., it's nighttime. So any wake up after 6 p.m. is nighttime, mustn't come out the room. And that brings me to the bedtime, to the principle of a bedtime routine. 1 hour before whatever time you've set. So let's say tonight it's 6 p.m., tomorrow night it might be 7 p.m. But 1 hour before that, you do a full bedtime routine. And that includes never leaving the room. And unfortunately for social butterflies, that never leaving the room after bath becomes a principle that actually lasts all the way through the toddler years. Because if they think that the world lives after bath time, they will take that gap. So, and they will protest bedtime. So with them, we're much more rigid around bedtime routines. Don't leave the room. Don't take him for a walk in the garden. He gets out of bath. He goes into his room. He has a story, a massage, soft playing music. The room is dark. He gets his final breastfeed and a top-up bottle. You do all of that in that hour. And hopefully you'll have a second set of hands with Max so that there's no stimulation, because I know if a toddler's around, it's stimulating. So, and again, do this for 2 weeks religiously, and let's see where we get into. Okay. So now we've got everything set up. And now, in theory, this is what we're going to do for bedtimes. And this is going to be bedtimes within the day and also then at night. You're going to, obviously the room is dark, you've done the bedtime routine, and if it isn't bed, then that's an hour in the evening, and if it's in the day, it's just 15 minutes of calming. And then what you're going to do is you're going to give him a love and a cuddle, you're going to pop his dummy in, give him his doo-doo blankie, you're going to say goodnight, and you're going to walk out the room. Okay, so that's going to be your first response. And he's going to do one of three things. The one is that he's going to immediately start screaming, because that's not what he expects. The other one is that he's going to completely shock you and fall asleep. And the third one is that he's going to talk. The third one is that he's either going to talk, like, you know, fussing, not fussing, but just kind of, I call it iffing and butting. A little bit of a cry, a little bit of a talk, a little bit of a cry, a little bit of a talk. And you're not going to go in for that. And you will only go in when that disintegrates into crying. So if he is not crying, you don't ever go in. He can talk for 2 hours if he wants to. And don't get worried about, oh my goodness, he's overshot his awake time now. Just leave him. He will talk and talk and talk. He's got his white noise on in the room. He's got his doo-doo blankie. He's clearly not got his dummy in now because that's fallen out. But that's fine. I'm sorry, let me just... all right, so he's going to do one of these three things. But you do not go in if he's talking at all. And if he is crying a little bit, you also don't go in. Like if he's kind of fussing and, you know, but irritable, don't go in. And the reason for that is that often when we're there, they, especially with social butterflies, they think, well, if you're here, I will give you a job. And that will be to lift me, rock me, feed me. But if you're not there, I probably will just chat to myself and eventually fall asleep. So let's give him the benefit of that doubt. Once he escalates to proper crying, you're going to go in immediately. Okay, so we're not going to do any controlled crying. We're not going to do any sleep training of that sort. But you are going to give him the opportunity to do it himself. So now what happens is that he's either fallen asleep or he's talked and he's going to sleep eventually, or now he's screaming, and that could happen immediately or it could happen a little bit later. And that, by the way, you're going to do for all day sleeps, bedtime, and the middle of the night. So in the middle of the night, you're also going to listen. And if it's just talking and squawking and kind of wah, 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 you're going to leave him. If he's crying, you go in. You're then going to do the same settling technique for all of these sleeps. And the settling technique involves being emotionally available. So you've got to be calm. You're not stressed. It was exactly what you were planning to do, was to do 40 minutes of soothing, because that's okay. That's your job for now. You are going to give him lots of emotional comfort. You're not going to be cross or frustrated. You are going to pat and love him. You might stroke his head. You'll hold his dummy in. So you're going to support him 100% to fall asleep. The only piece he's not going to get is the feed to sleep and the rock to sleep, because those pieces, and he's shown it to you the last two nights, are actually frustrating him because he doesn't know what to do with it. So he's going to lie down. And if he cries lying down or if he cries in your arms, it's just the same thing. So he's lying down. You've got your hand potentially in front of his face, holding his dummy in. He's lying on his side and you're giving him some quite nice deep tapping on his bum. Tap, tap, tap. And if that doesn't work, maybe a little bit of stroking down on his forehead, down towards his nose. And then maybe back to some tapping and always keeping that dummy in. So you're doing huge support to get him to sleep. And he might arch his back and push. And if he's really arching his back and pushing, remove your hands away from him. Give him a couple of minutes. And if he's screaming, don't leave the room. If he's quiet now, you can leave the room. But if he is screaming, you stand there with him and his dummy will fall out. He's screaming, arching his back. And then you do the same thing. Give him about a few minutes and then you put the dummy back in and start patting again. What you'll find is the 60 to 90 minutes that you did last night and the night before, it's actually going to be shorter than that. It might be 40 minutes. And the first night, it's going to feel like you're going to feel like I must lift him, I must rock him or do something else. But try and just stick with the same strategy. And try also, when I talk about sticking with the same strategy, you must do it, not Pete. So we have only one parent do it just for the first week. It generally takes 3 nights. So it's not internal, it's not going to go on forever, but it's better if it's just one person, because you won't do it the same as Pete, even if he's heard the podcast. It's just you need to do it. So you're going to do it for every sleep, you're going to do it for bedtime, you're going to do it in the middle of the night, give him the opportunity to fall asleep, and if it doesn't work, you're going to support him 100%. Later on, we'll then transition him to doing it all on his own, but for now he needs the support, and it is expected that he would need support at this age. So it's gentle sleep coaching. There is some crying involved, which is why people get worried about it. They don't want to have their baby crying, but inevitably an overtired baby's crying anyway, if they're just doing it lying down and not in your arms. And quite quickly, they start to learn that actually I can fall asleep, I can transition this state. And of course, we've put in place all the other stuff already. They can learn to go, okay, I can transition the state. I can fall back to sleep. And then they do it. They fall back to sleep. And then in the middle of the night, when you hear him, listen, because he might work it out himself. If he doesn't, and it's not 1 o'clock, go in, offer him water, and do the same thing, the patting and the shushing. If it's after 1 o'clock, you're going to feed him. And then you're going to feed him again at four.
Literally just one question that I have on this is there a point where I must just call it and be like, this is not working. Let's start tomorrow or whatever it is. Like, I mean, should I just keep going for 2 or 3 hours if he decides he's strong enough to be able to persevere?
He definitely won't do 3 hours. So a couple of things. You can WhatsApp me now for the next 3 days, anytime you want to. And I would love you to. You just WhatsApp me in the evening and say, okay, that was 45 minutes. It was really hard. I'm feeling a little bit shaky. Is everything okay? Or you might go, oh my gosh, that was only 20 minutes. That was so unexpected. And so you WhatsApp me for the next 3 days. I'll support you through it and tell you what to expect next. This is what you can expect. The first night can be about 45 to 90 minutes, and it feels like forever, okay? It's going to feel hard. And he will wake as much at night as he ever did before, so 4 times, and it'll always probably be that long, and it's awful. And then tomorrow morning after 4 a.m., you must sleep in if you can, and let Pete wake him up and take him in, or have him in the morning, and you don't wake him from sleeps, obviously, but you take him in the morning. The next day, it will be so much shorter. Like, that's when moms message me after a day and they go, oh my goodness, was it just that, you know? And that is where you've really like immediately made a bit of traction. So the second night, you will be, it'll be a lot easier and a lot shorter. And then sometimes you're more tired, so it feels bad, but it is shorter. And by the third night, you've generally broken the back of it. And then 7 nights down the line, so today in 7 nights' time, he will properly protest. Like, he'll go back to the starting blocks. You go back to night one of the strategy we do, and then they only do that for 1 night. And that's just generally what we see. We see it takes about 3 nights to break the back of it for them to learn the new skill, as long as we've sorted everything else out. And I'm comfortable that we have. We know about his nutrition. We know about his health. We understand his sensory profile. We've set up the day routine. We've done the bedtime routine. We've got the sleep zone. We're good to go.
Okay, great. And then, Meg, sorry, just one more question. So there is absolutely no picking up during this time, even if it is not to rock or to feed or anything, but say he just keeps screaming and screaming and screaming, and none of the shushing and the patting has worked, to then pick him up, calm him, and then put him back down again and start again. No, it's just keeping in the cot.
You can do that. You can do that. But it will take longer. It will take a little longer, because then, particularly with your social butterflies, they kind of work out that, okay, if I do that, then yeah, I can, you know. So I personally prefer to give my love and comfort with him lying down. But if it does need to sit okay with you, and if you reach a point where you are feeling like you don't want to continue, then pick him up, give him a love and cuddle, but always just make sure he does the last little bit himself, okay? All right. And the other thing I just want you to know, I just want you and the moms to know, because sometimes this is really, it's a hard story to tell, even as a therapist. But this is a life skill. It's not something that he shouldn't be expected to do. Learning to self-soothe is what little ones do, and they can't do it before 4 months because they're too little. By 4 months, they're getting their hands to their midline. They're starting to regulate their state. They're starting to cope with the sensory environment. And so teaching them to learn to sleep on their own is a life skill. And so that's why it feels very comfortable for me to give this sort of advice, because it's a life skill. It's essential in the context of your mood and engagement with him. And it's good for his development. Overtired babies don't develop as well as babies who get in good night's sleeps. They need that sleep. So we are putting in place the right things for his health and for your health as well.
Amazing. Nick, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Nina. So I will hear from you. You can WhatsApp me. If you start tonight, just say, I've decided to jump in tonight. And then WhatsApp me after he's gone down. Tell me how long it was. I'll tell you what's coming up next. And then you can do that for the next 3 nights, for 3 nights after you've started. And then you'll find that, you know, after X number of nights, you'll say, actually, I don't need you anymore. Thank you very much. I'm on my way. Okay.
Wonderful. Can't wait to get to that point.
Brilliant. Okay, Nina, best of luck. And thank you for the chat today. I'm sure lots of other moms have learned so much.
Brilliant. Cheers. Chat soon.
Excellent. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.